Larry, how are you?
I'm Aaron Allen, and this is Curious City.
Yeah, I know.
Today, our producer, Justin Bull, is in Burnham Park with question asker Larry Arroyo, and they're in front of a literal ancient artifact.
Where are we, Larry?
We are currently at the Balbo Monument, right across from Soldier Field.
What are we looking at here? Describe what this looks like.
This is a large Roman pillar dating back to the Roman Empire that is now sitting on the lakefront. It has engravings talking about the friendship between Chicago and Italy. The problem is, this is literally a fascist monument in Chicago.
The Balbo Monument is not a bust or a statue. It's a 13-foot-tall column on a stone base with an interesting inscription. The words have faded a little bit out in the elements, but what it used to say in part was this.
Fascist Italy, by command of Benito Mussolini, presents the Chicago Exaltation Symbol Memorial of the Atlantic Squadron, led by Balbo, with Roman daring, flew across the ocean in the 11th year of the fascist era. That's it. This is a pillar that's older than America, it's older than Chicago, it's older than Christianity. If you come here, it's hidden behind the trees, so most people are just gonna walk right past it.
What's your question for Curious City?
My question is, why is a fascist monument still on display in a time when we're taking down Confederate statues and Columbus statues?
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You wouldn't know much about this column if you happened to walk past it. It has no signs beyond the fading inscription crediting Mussolini. It has a police camera watching it at all times and is surrounded by a flimsy chain link fence. For a pillar hidden in plain sight, the Balbo Monument has caused decades of debate.
It's an embarrassment.
I think it's really outstanding and kind of extraordinary.
I would ship it back to Italy and say, thank you, this has historical value.
It is a great one of those ground zero cases to understand our complicated histories.
Today we're going to answer Larry's question. Why does Chicago still have the Balbo Monument? But first, who was Italo Balbo, the person it was named for? Curious City producer Justin Bull takes it from here after the break.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork.
Italian fascist dictator Benito Mussolini sent Chicago an ancient Roman column in 1934. We accepted it, gratefully, in commemoration of an absolute spectacle that took place 1 year prior on a summer evening at the Chicago World's Fair. Not the one in 1893, the other World's Fair.
Here we are, folks, at Chicago's world-famed Century of Progress.
A big message of that fair was that, despite the Great Depression, modern science and technology can save us. And the technology of the day was aviation.
On to Chicago, their goal, the end of a 6,100-mile journey from Orbitello.
Italo Balbo was the marshal of the Italian Air Force. When he came to the fair, he made an entrance.
The Air Armada formed a beautiful picture as it soared over the World's Fair, with all Chicago cheering the visitors.
Balbo arrived with 24 seaplanes after a harrowing, dangerous, multi-day transatlantic flight from Italy. As he appeared over the horizon, the crowds and the press ate it up, especially the moment Balbo and his squadron landed on Lake Michigan.
They come out of the sky, there's sort of growling planes, there's something, you know, flying Bugattis.
This is author and historian David Hanna.
And their precision was just outstanding. Everybody who was there later said that it was just, you know, it was like watching almost like a ballet. Everything was perfectly timed. It was meant to impress. And because of the nature of Chicago, I can't think, frankly, of another city off the top of my head that would be more ideal for this. Because you have, of course, that sort of a necklace of beaches, you know, or at least lakefront. And so everybody could just congregate. Everybody was there.
Chicagoan Don Fiore says his father was there.
He was. My father was actually playing in one of the bands that was there. My father was a musician, what they call a bandista.
Don is the author of the 2023 book, Italo Balbo's Flight to the 1933 Chicago World's Fair. Don says Balbo's arrival was especially important for his dad, who was born in Italy, as well as the rest of Chicago's Italian immigrant community, who he says were accustomed to prejudice and stereotype.
The immigrants who came here, they were really the lowest of the low in the eyes of the American society. But Balbo, it gave them such enormous pride. And here you have this cutting edge technology being displayed by this flight. So it was such a contradiction to what the Italian American population, specifically the immigrant population, but also their American born children, were facing in public.
Fascism at that time was associated mainly with anti-communism. Benito Mussolini was often seen as a modernizer, and by most accounts, Balbo was a sensation.
General Balbo received the tribute of a conquering hero, a modern master of the sky, who replied to the shouts of Viva Balbo with the exclamation of real friendship.
Viva Chicago! Viva gli Stati Uniti d'America!
The monument with his name on it wouldn't arrive for another year, but while Balbo was here in 33, Chicago Mayor Edward Kelly gave him a key to the city, and he renamed 7th Street after him. You know, Balbo Drive. In a short speech, Balbo praised the mission's true chief, Mussolini. But David Hanna says the day was Balbo's.
He was the best possible, the most attractive face that fascism could have presented to the United States.
So, who was Italo Balbo? What drove him? And what makes him controversial?
He wanted to have a life where he was going to make a difference.
Hanna, by the way, is a teacher and, importantly, the author of the book Broken Icarus, the 1933 Chicago World's Fair, the Golden Age of Aviation, and the Rise of Fascism.
And he certainly was bold.
Hanna writes that Balbo grew up in an Italy that many were leaving, 400,000 a year. At 18, Balbo enlisted immediately in World War I and was awarded 3 medals. And after the war, Balbo and other Italian veterans thought Italy got stiffed by the other Allied powers at the Paris Peace Conference. And this is where Benito Mussolini enters the picture. Hanna says Mussolini seized on the feelings that were fomenting in Italy and turned them into an actual political party.
Rather than something which was kind of amorphous in the beginning, just a bunch of frustrated and angry, mostly veterans. And so once the fascist party became an actual party, it was a natural fit for someone like Italo Balbo to get involved with this and be like the local captain in part of Italy that he was from.
Balbo and these disgruntled veterans were also concerned by the spread of communism.
And they needed to do something. And what did they know how to do? Well, they knew how to knock heads. That's what they had done. They were trained killers. And they were pretty brutal.
Balbo led groups of men on punitive expeditions through the northern Italian countryside against socialist leaders and sympathizers. They called themselves black shirts, or squadristi. And one tactic was forcing opponents of fascism to drink castor oil, a powerful laxative.
They would soil themselves. So it was sort of a form of torture, terror, but then also humiliation. And then in 1922, in the March on Rome, which was essentially a cross between, coup d'etat and theater.
Balbo was the youngest of 4 architects of the March on Rome that swept Mussolini into power.
Mussolini, his megalomania will just grow and grow and grow throughout the 20s and the 30s. Balbo was there, from pretty early on, and Balbo hitched his star to Mussolini. There's no doubt about it. I think he realized that being close to Mussolini was going to be good for his career.
As for some of the more heinous crimes that were tied to the fascist movement at this time, including sexual violence and the murder of a prominent political opponent, Hannah says there's no evidence that Balbo himself directly participated.
It's hard to imagine him being involved in any of that based on what I learned about him. It just doesn't fit. But how could he have been completely insulated from knowing that this stuff was going on? And his sycophancy regarding Mussolini, which was on full display in Chicago in 1933, is just absolutely cringeworthy. But I guess in his head, maybe he's making a deal that is acceptable because fascism at least can stand up to communism. But yeah, he's an attractive figure for good reason. But he's also an enabler of something that was at its worst, absolutely brutal. And at its least worst was just ridiculous. You know, Mussolini was a buffoon. And to put all of your energies into glorifying someone like that, I mean, what does that say about you?
Mussolini put Balbo in charge of the Air Force, and Balbo excelled. He modernized the Italian Air Force. He pioneered the idea of flying boat squadrons. He became a world-famous aviator. But after Balbo grabbed headlines in Chicago, Mussolini sensed Balbo's star shining a little too brightly. He appointed Balbo governor of the Italian colonial territory of Libya.
Not exactly something that was seen as a promotion by Balbo or anybody else. It was a way to just get him out of the picture because Libya at that time was seen as remote.
Balbo came to Libya after a particularly heinous era in its history, according to Ali Abulatif Amida, a scholar of colonialism in North Africa and the author of the 2021 book Genocide in Libya, Shar, A Hidden Colonial History.
It was very brutal, very violent.
Amida says Balbo's predecessor led a campaign of displacement and genocide that killed 60 to 70,000 indigenous Libyans outright. By the time Balbo arrived, Libyan resistance had been crushed, so Balbo came with an olive branch and a goal of creating a new image. Ever the imperialist, Balbo built infrastructure and modernized Libya in prep for a wave of Italian colonists.
And they succeeded. But at the same time, we should not be fooled by this really new way of creating a good image with the local population. This fascist state was genocidal, and Balbo is just trying to give it a spin and a positive image. It's like putting lipstick on a pig. The pig is going to be a pig no matter what.
Balbo spent the rest of his life in Libya because he'd be dead by mid-1940. But it's the run-up to World War II where his political calculations get more interesting. Balbo was not anti-Semitic, and he deeply despised Mussolini's turn toward the Nazis, according to his biographer, Claudio Segre. Segre wrote that Balbo had nothing but contempt for the racist policies of the Nazis, and that he, quote, opposed Mussolini courageously when the dictator introduced similar policies in Italy. Yet, Balbo's actions were also full of inconsistencies. He hosted Nazi dignitaries. He urged Mussolini to change course, but never broke with the regime, never resigned, never mounted a serious legal or armed opposition, never risked his position. In the late 30s, fascism was a slowly sinking ship, Segre wrote, and Balbo, quote, chose to stay aboard, bail, and from time to time, shout advice to a deaf captain.
And then, of course, he dies at the beginning of World War II in what seems to have been a friendly fire incident.
Balbo was thought of as Mussolini's probable successor, so conspiracies abounded about whether Mussolini had Balbo's plane shot down intentionally. Hannah and others said there's no conclusive evidence of that. But ultimately, in 1940, Italo Balbo was dead, 9 months after Hitler invaded Poland and a year after Mussolini allied with the Nazis. So, that's an abridged version of his biography. The question now is, should that resume preclude Balbo's transatlantic flight from being memorialized in a city that isn't his? the debate over the monument after the break.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
WBEZ is supported by Shedd Aquarium, where animals, people, science, and conservation come together. Through community outreach, education, and research, Shedd protects the water that supports life in the Great Lakes region and beyond. More at sheddaquarium.org. Shedd Aquarium, for animals, for people, for communities, for love of waterkind.
The debate over whether Chicago should have a monument from a fascist, named for a fascist, is not new at all. It's been talked about since World War II, and at least twice a decade since the 1980s, according to Professor Nick Carter at the Australian Catholic University. After World War II, for instance, Italy's anti-fascist ambassador to the U.S. asked Mayor Edward Kelly to remove the monument and rename the road. It didn't happen. Around that same time, businesses along Balboa Drive asked the city council to rename the road for an American Navy pilot hero killed in the Battle of Midway. That petition was blocked on technical grounds. The suspicion was Mayor Kelly buried that proposal so as not to lose votes from the Italian-American community. The debate faded for a while until 1981, when it was revived by influential Tribune journalist Vernon Jarrett, who wondered why Chicago could honor a fascist, but not our first permanent black settler, Jean-Baptiste Pointe-du-Sable. Alderman Bill Ocasio made a similar argument in 1993 in campaigning for a statue for Puerto Rican nationalist leader Pedro Albizu Campos. Over the next few decades, academics and journalists made calls for change off and on. Some suggested Balboa Drive be renamed for a more deserving local Italian, like nuclear physicist Enrico Fermi. But no changes were made. Then,
every monument that represents fascism and racism has to come down.
Protests followed the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville in 2017 and the 2020 murder of George Floyd. That and vandalism led to the eventual removal of the Christopher Columbus statue in Grant Park. And those protests nearly moved city council to remove the Balboa Monument and rename Balboa Drive for Ida B. Wells.
Only a few blocks long is causing controversy for miles. Right now it's named for Italian aviator Italo Balboa.
But after stiff opposition from local Italian-American organizations, Ida B. Wells' name replaced Congress Parkway instead. The Park District said an info panel would go up next to the monument, but that never happened either. And then finally, in 2022, Mayor Lori Lightfoot's administration put out the Chicago Monuments Project final report. It recommended removing the Balboa Monument and putting it in storage. So here now begins a new quest. I reached out to a few people about the Balboa Monument, those with the power to do something, those from local cultural groups, and those with relevant expertise about what we should do with it.
Well, it should be taken down. I don't think it has any part to be in the public park in Chicago.
Edward Muir, professor of history and Italian at Northwestern University.
Well, you need to look at it, the inscription on the monument, which is celebrating the glories of fascism. I don't remember exactly how it reads, but it's there. It's an embarrassment, I think. If anywhere, it belongs in a warehouse somewhere where no one can see it.
Should Chicago have a monument and a street named for Balboa, in your opinion?
That's an excellent question, Justin. Yes and no.
Professor Ali Abulatif Amida, author of Genocide in Libya, Shar, A Hidden Colonial History.
I think, should the city? No. But at least there should be a caption or another sign explaining this is a monument for a fascist general who also responsible for a lot of atrocities, especially in Libya.
I heard something similar from a local community deeply affected by fascist Italy. In 1935, while Balbo was governing Libya, Italy started a war with Ethiopia, where it used chemical weapons on civilians, deployed via aircraft. In a written statement, the Ethiopian Community Association of Chicago said that this history is not distant for Ethiopians, and that, quote, the continued public honoring of a figure closely associated with that regime, particularly without clear historical context, raises serious concerns about how this past is remembered and represented. That idea came up a few more times, that the monument, if nothing else, lacks clear historical context. Author Don Fiore, a supporter of the monument, said he did write a caption for it in 2017 in collaboration with the city.
Free of any political connotations or endorsements, and as the only artifact still standing in place from the fair, the column remains in tribute to the heroic Transatlantic Flyers and as a reminder of the ever-changing course of history. So I feel in that we've addressed pretty much all of the issues on the table that was submitted to the city. Nothing was heard of again.
So there were projects that I worked on where they, where I was asked to write interpretive signs.
Julia Backrack worked for the Chicago Park District as a historian and a preservationist for more than two decades. She says she wrote signs for a number of Chicago monuments, but the district thought they created visual clutter, so they put the info on their website instead.
It can be changed. It can be added to. It doesn't really cost you almost nothing to go in and edit. So that was the decision.
Julia also told me that the Park District approached local museums in the 1990s to ask, hey, are you interested in the Balboa Monument? They declined, she said, but not for political reasons. It was because the monument didn't fit in with their collections at the time.
Balboa was a hero. Balboa was a sign of hope and faith and pride for the Italian community.
Ron Onesti has been the president of the Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans for 6 years now. He thinks the monument should stay and that Balbo and the monument are misunderstood.
I would never suggest to shy away from or downplay his involvement in that regime. I mean, there's nobody here that says Mussolini was a good person. Nobody here saying fascism was good. And there's also nobody here saying we should keep this monument as a monument to fascism, as a remembrance of Mussolini. No, we shouldn't. But that's not what this is. We have to go back to the purpose of this monument. You know, what is it celebrating? There were over 100,000 people on the lakefront here in Chicago when they saw those beautiful 24 biplanes that came and was one of the first intercontinental flights across the ocean. And we keep staying away from what it actually was, a celebration, a gift, a relic, all those things.
He said he does not support any efforts to rename Balboa Drive for another Italian figure. And he said if he could make it happen, he would want the area around the Balboa Monument to be expanded upon and turned into an exhibit.
We believe, and I believe, and I'm sure so many people believe, that the purpose of art is really to instigate dialogue, good and bad. But that's what the purpose of artwork is. And if there are two people having a debate, good and bad, in front of a piece of art, that I think really that's why the Mona Lisa smiles.
Former Park District historian Julia Backrack also supports the idea of keeping the monument for different reasons.
My personal taste would be to leave monuments and reinterpret them as the Park District and DCAS have been doing. And there's some really good first examples of that. But I just wouldn't want to say anything that would spur vandalism. Just bringing attention to some of these monuments, I don't feel like destroying art is the answer. So that, I guess that's one of my main concerns. It's a really complex issue, and I don't mean to minimize the complexity of it, but I would hope that any decisions that are made would consider the fact that this is a really valuable ancient archaeological ruin that had other meaning before Balbo came to visit Chicago in the 1930s.
I wanted to know more about that other meaning that the monument had. So I went to Columbia College Chicago to speak with Professor Onur Ozturk. He specializes in Roman architecture, and he's writing a book on the Balbo Monument.
There, I try to visit at least every 6 months, and I have been doing that for the last 10 years.
And I just have to mention, his office is right near the corner of Wabash and Balbo. What is the point of Benito Mussolini and Balbo sending Chicago a Roman column?
Yeah, I think it was to respond to our obsession with Roman art and architecture and culture.
I'm not sure how often you think about the Roman Empire, but Mussolini apparently sent us this column because he knew Americans were obsessed with the Roman Empire, something you can see then and now in buildings like the U.S. Capitol, Monticello, Soldier Field, the Museum of Science and Industry. But the gift was doing a number of other things, too.
From a branding perspective, I think this was a way of branding the Italian fascist government with the origin, basically suggesting that we have this incredible history that the whole world is envious about. So with this column, we are making that statement. You have these amazing structures in Chicago, but here's the real thing. And by the way, you can keep it.
Owner says this column was taken from a late antique building in Ostia, outside Rome. In Chicago, it was placed in front of the Italian Pavilion during year two of the Chicago World's Fair. And owner says Mussolini wanted viewers of the column to link the fascist era with the Roman era. It was an ad for tourists to come visit Italy. And it asked us to remember the glory of Italy's transatlantic flight to Chicago. And Mussolini wasn't just courting us. He sent Roman columns to at least three other world cities as well.
One of them is very well known in Kyoto, Japan, but there's also one in Sao Paulo in Brazil. And there's another one in Hungary, in Budapest, that's still standing there. And he was very good at picking this relatively, I have to say, in quotations, like mediocre Roman columns that were created and copied in so many different versions and make a big deal out of it, right?
You think this particular column, in the grand scheme of things, is mediocre?
Yeah, compared to like things that travel, like think about Pergamon's altar in Berlin or the famous Parthenon marbles in London. I have been to many Roman sites. Romans created amazing columns. That's not one of the best. There's no question about it.
To Owner, the beauty of this monument is its modern history.
This later history is much more fascinating because it reveals so many things about Italian fascism, Chicago in the early 20th century, our complicated history of world fairs. So that's the reason why I love it as a great case study to look at our history.
Oh, muddy. Oh, God. I went back to the Balbo Monument on a breezy morning with one more thing to do. Knowing the column spent around two millennia in a Mediterranean climate before doing 90 years of hard time in the Chicago winter, I wanted to know about its durability. So I asked a world-renowned sculpture conservator to meet me there. Can you introduce yourself?
Andrei Danielski.
Might people best know you for your recent restoration of the Art Institute Lions, do you think?
Probably, because that's the most visible.
So we're here looking at the Balbo Monument. Does this need a restoration?
It definitely does. Well, the bottom, I'm not sure how what was the condition of the marble at the bottom, but definitely it has damages. And then travertine that is below, that's the base, the biggest part of the whole thing, that's a stone that is should not be used in our climate outdoors, because that stone in its nature has huge porosity, and then when water gets there in the winter, that's kind of obvious. It just expands, pops the pieces of stone apart, and when you get up there, you will see that there are many tiny cracks that you don't see. This monument needs a lot of work.
Andres told me that moving this monument would be very risky, and that it would be much safer to build a structure to protect it, kind of like the glass roof over the Chagall, the Four Seasons artwork downtown. Well, I gotta ask, how much would a restoration or something to shelter this, how much would all that cost?
It's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't know exactly how much.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, how many more winters can this thing take out here? Like, 10 years? Like, does it have 10 more winters in it?
Perhaps, but I wouldn't push it much farther. Something like this usually works this way, that nothing happens, then there is catastrophic failure, and then it would be big outcry because the column is going to fall apart. Until there is this dramatic kind of disaster-like event, it will not be very obvious from a distance that there is something going wrong.
So, back to the original question. Why does Chicago still have the Balbo Monument? The Chicago Park District said in a written statement that there are currently no plans to remove it, as the district is focused on a number of other related projects. Those projects include the Monument Response Project, launched in April, which stages artistic events at controversial monuments with the goal of reimagining public narratives. Another is the Park District's Sculptural Diversification Project, which is commissioning new art to better reflect the, quote, diversity, history, and cultural narratives of our community. Regarding the Balbo Monument, the district said that any future action would require securing funding, identifying an appropriate receiving institution or site, and ensuring proper preservation of the ancient Roman artifact. So, as for restoration or relocation, no decisions have been made. And that's not really too surprising, because making a decision about the Balbo Monument, whatever it is, will cost both money and political capital. That's been the case for decades. And when it comes down to it, Chicago has bigger problems to worry about. So, whether or not Chicago should honor Italo Balbo remains debatable. But either way, a Roman column is still out there in the temperamental Chicago elements. Even if we don't make a decision about the Balbo Monument, sooner or later, Mother Nature will.
This week's Curious City was reported by our producer, Justin Bull. Susie Ahn is our editor. Curious City is a production of WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. If you have questions about Chicago and the region, send them our way at curiouscity@wbez.org or visit us at wbez.org/curiouscity. I'm your host, Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next week.
Curious City is supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering a roster of public events under the theme No One Can Afford to Lose Love. All are welcome to readings by exceptional local poets, including W.J. Lofton, Lisa Lowe, and Rob Makaisa Colgate, plus live musical performance by Decomposed, and more. Details at poetryfoundation.org.
If you were locked away in a prison, what sounds would you miss hearing the most? I'm Erin Allen, host of Prison Cast, a new podcast from WBEZ Chicago that brings you stories and voices from the inside.
You know, we have a saying in prison, we all we got, and we know that's true.
Everything on the show comes directly from a request, a question, or an idea from somebody locked up in Illinois. Listen to Prison Cast wherever you get your podcasts.